you shouldn't ignore the small things in your life that give you the most joy. We always try to get, like people say, you want that, you want all the big things.
Yeah.
And I feel in the world today, we focus a lot on the big things. We want to go after the bigger things. And obviously there is amazing stuff that comes with that. But every day you have some amazing things that happen to you. Like even if you have a great slice of pizza, you might just spend that 5 minutes talking to a friend. Like for me, rubbing my dog's belly is one of my favorite parts of my day. And we don't value those enough.
Okay, tell me, now that you have built a company, you have spoken to like a lot of people at a leadership position, you run a podcast, you talk obviously to a lot of people. What is that? What is like a step, like three steps or 3 points you want to tell everybody that this is how you make people listen? Because the world is crazily noisy right now.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to speak. Everybody is speaking.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at like you started podcast when probably nobody was doing, but right now there are like thousands of people. Everybody is doing everything.
Yeah.
So how do you make sure that people listen to you?
For my first thing was, who will listen to me is where I started off. But what I've actually learned over time is if you focus on something you know you can do for a long period of time and you're authentically talking about it, people eventually come to you. I think that the more you try to put something in there which you don't really know enough about, you are trying to say, okay, everybody's talking about this topic, let me talk about it. Or like, you know, this is what is trending right now, let me talk about that. But if that conversation, if that content is not something which is innately something you can give depth to, and if you don't start with the why, for me, it's always been about why am I doing every show that I do? Why am I doing every piece, every conversation? Why am I getting into this? And that's really what makes it simpler for me. I kind of get in and say, okay, am I focusing on a certain why in any discussion? So why did Glitch come to be? Right? Glitch came to be because we were both people who worked in music television and music television stopped playing music. And they were going to go just television. And we're like, where's the fun stuff happening? And so it's happening online. Okay, let's go do that. Let's go try and do interesting content with brands online. That was our why. That is literally how we started. There was no business plan, nothing. Both of us quit our jobs and said, let's just do content for brands. Now, over the years, that why evolved. Like it went from saying, okay, let's do, why can't we do more innovative, like interactive content? So spent the first 3 years pitching interactive content to every brand, every movie studio, everybody else, and did as much of that as we could. Did regular work also. We've done showreels for actors who gone to Hollywood, which I will not name, and so on and so forth. But that evolved. But every time, every sit down saying, why do we exist? Why are we doing what we're doing? And I think that's an important thing for a company to really do. If you don't have that, then you're just going after what's hitting the P&L, right? Or what's making your ego kind of feel better. But if it's stuck on that, why that works. The content in the same way. Advertising is dead happened, I still remember this, 2018. I'd gone as a guest on a couple of podcasts. I'd first gone on a pilot, which is for Filter Coffee, Karthik Nagarajan's podcast. I was on his pilot. And then I went on a live recording for Simplified, which is the other podcast that was happening live in Dulali.
Okay.
So finished that. Me and Amit and Kavita from IBM were having a beer. And they said, there's no podcast at that time, no podcast on advertising and marketing. There were a few business podcasts, but they were a lot more finance focused. So I said, I don't know enough about advertising and marketing because I've worked in it, but I'm a bit of an outsider because I come from production. That's all I focused on, even through Glitch's journey largely. So I said, let me just talk about what's changed. Because what I couldn't figure out when I wanted to study media was that unless you went to college, there was no way for you to learn how each part of that industry worked. What does someone do if they're working in, let's say, a furniture company in marketing versus what does someone do if they're working on, like, let's say the agency side as a writer. So that's what I wanted to do. Let's figure that out. Let's add more people in there who will give me perspective. I'm a learner. My entire why was, why can't everybody learn about everything about business, advertising, media, and that expanded over time. It went from just marketing to startups and creators to now basically anybody in the business space now is there. I think one of my most interesting recent chats was spoke to these two gentlemen who worked with Star Sports in building neuroscience into how they tracked ads.
Okay.
So they tracked attention of the audience during the last IPL. Basically saying how often are they paying attention. So they'd put cameras, they'd done a bunch of stuff there and literally neuroscience in advertising, right? That's another whole space. Suddenly some things blow your mind, like, okay, how is this happening? And if I look at the podcast, like right now, I always feel that we'll always never have one why. I like, for me, Take a Pause, which is now, this podcast has gone through its third iteration. It was first Useless Information, then became the Varun Dughi Show, which eventually I ran away from because I hate to just have it as my name. Take a Pause happened because I'm like, there's so much stuff I learn, which I want to share with people. And I somehow feel audio makes you learn in a very different way from video. It's very like, it's in your ear, you listen to it, it somewhere gets stored there. Video is great, but I feel audio has far deeper, like, you know, it just soaks in. It's almost like your brain's like a sponge and it's gone in there. So I sat in front of a mic and started recording stuff, which I wanted to share. Initially, I think for the first, 8-9 months, I just recorded by myself. On my iPad, plug it in, upload through Anchor and distribute. I did that for about 8 months. Now I finally built a team who's now helping me produce, add more sound design. But it's again that, like, if you're taking that moment to pause in your day, and we're all surrounded by chaos, can you learn something that will help you? Can you learn something that can help you perform better, build the right mindset? Maybe even find motivation, but I'm more focused on mindset than motivation most of the time. I'm like, that mindset is so important, because motivation is a tricky word oftentimes. And also, like, I think a little overused also lately.
Motivation is technically mindset at the end of the day.
Yeah.
People just have used it in the wrong way.
But I always do that. That's what. So I know I give a very long answer to a short question, but I focus on the why, and then I turn around and listen to my audience a lot. I always ask, what more do you want to learn about?
But don't you think that sometimes what audience tells you is not really good for what you're doing? Because
so you have to filter out also. I agree with 100%. Sometimes you get some random, like, I always get saying, why don't you do a podcast in Hindi? And I'm like, I could, but it won't be as natural as, I think Telugu might be more natural to me than Hindi will be, because it's my mother tongue. And at some point, default setting will come back. Factory setting will come back. But I didn't do. But someone said the other day, why don't you talk about stoicism more on the podcast? You talk about it normally anyway so much. Like, that makes sense. Why haven't I done that before? Someone told me the other day that why don't you quote stuff from your own journey? Because I don't do that enough.
Okay. You don't talk about your journey.
I don't talk my journey enough. So someone said, why don't you do that?
Okay, let's do that today.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay. So I have an interesting question. You said you've done a bunch of sleazy stuff as well and a bunch of good stuff on the production side, right?
Yeah.
Tell me one story and one thing which you're really proud of. Like, oh, we did this at Glitch and this is why, this is my idea. And one which is like horrible.
So there was one show which was a bit of a game changer for us. It was, I think, I don't remember the year. There was a show called Nano Drive with MTV. Nano Drive with MTV. Okay. I think this is about 2004-5. If I no no 2009 we started about 2004-5. It was 2012-13 maybe, if around that time. And that's time before Jio, right? So bandwidth was terrible. So we worked with the MTV digital team. It was a combined idea, where we sent 4 nanos to 4 parts of the country.
Okay.
4 people in each nano. Every day they would shoot, edit what they've shot, upload it onto YouTube and Facebook. And this is like way before all this stuff happened, right? But they have to, on the road, edit and upload. And basis how many views they got, how many likes they got, how many retweets they got, they would get points, which would convert to money. So eventually, at the end of their 21-day journey, whatever their points were, that money they could take home.
Okay.
Right. And we did 3 seasons of that show, and every season we had to figure bandwidth. We literally mapped the entire country for where what data is. So everybody had dongles at that point of time. So dongles, and we've sent it up the hills up north. It's gone across scale. I think we mapped pretty much every part of the country by the end of the 3 seasons. We stopped doing it because there was nothing else, nowhere else to go. So we just stopped. But what it showed for the brand was something interesting, right? Suddenly people saw that a nano could go up the mountains. It could go anywhere. Till then, you would always thought it's a sabzi wala car, right? Yeah, that's the perception. Yeah. This was a big perception shift for them. It really helped them because they did a lot of online polls and people had, and they'd used a lot of that content in their advertising. It really helped them. But I think that show, just from the fact that how the crew, which was basically each nano had another car behind them, which had 4 people, including a driver. That's all the crew was. So basically one driver, one production person, and two people who could shoot and edit, because we were also shooting them from the other side. Just to have some extra shots and stuff like that. But just the simple fact that we were able to do that on the road at a time before, like now it might seem easier because you couldn't even shoot on a phone. We had to take cameras along. And MacBook Pros didn't render as fast. So sometimes laptops would crash in like the weirdest of places and then suddenly you would not be able to do it. So I think the whole point was that we did it before,
way before it was cool.
And I think that moment and the people who came out of that from a crew perspective, from a talent perspective, still when we meet them, we know we went through a journey because that was something else. That's the one project I'm most proud of. Cross Glitch, I mean, many which I'm proud of, but that one for me was just like...
Game changer.
It was like, everyone said, what is wrong with Olive? Who can sakta? Because Roadies had like a 100-member crew.
Yeah.
We had 4 people, including a driver with every team. So it is literally like we went opposite. So that would be like top of my head, Glitch over the years. The one project I remember the most for just like...
And the one which you hate the most, like, no.
Too many
of those. I don't want anyone to talk about it.
I won't name the mobile provider, but way back what we had done was there was going to be a lot... 3G was supposed to be this video revolution.
Okay. Right?
When 3G came, we realized no video revolution happened on 3G. We actually created a lot of videos for one of the cellular providers to put on their platform. And they were supposed to be fitness videos, but what Fast became was they were less fitness and more visually everything else. So as it developed, we were all like, what is going on? Why is the feedback like this? Why? So eventually, I think at some point we canned the project because we were uncomfortable with it. But it was just like, what will people watch on their phones? They'll watch fitness videos. Be like, okay, fair enough. This is the brief. You're a production brief. Kar lete hain. But after a point, you're like, what is going on? This is not what we're going to ever create. So I think that was the weird one where everybody was very like unsure as to what was going on.
Okay. This is the last question in advertising. And then we move to the stoicism because I want to understand that. Mm. Okay. The question is that, in today's world, now that everything is changing, right? And there's no one way to create a brand.
Hmm.
Let's say you can go on television. I mean, that's dead almost. But still, you can build a brand there. You can build brand online. You can build specific on platforms like Instagram, YouTube, podcast, right? What is the right way for small businesses or the people who are looking at this? What's the most frugal way to build your brand in a really good manner? And let's say, let's give a window. I understand the brand building is a long process.
Yeah.
So let's give a window of 6 months. Is that good? Or do you want more?
No, I think 6 months. So in an ideal scenario, especially because of D2C being what it is right now for most brands, it's almost the percentage, right? If you look at the first 6 months, the biggest percentage will go towards performance marketing, pushing towards sale. And let's say about 60%, 80% goes towards that, and 20-30% max on brand building, because you want to put that out there.
Yeah.
If you want to be frugal, that's the best way to go. You get the most ROI because at the end of the day, what you're spending is getting you sales. So you're going that way. And over time, what I would say is that after the first year, that needs to skew a lot more towards brand building. Like you need to at least have brand building to about like 40% of your budget, at least if you ask me, over time, because the more people resonate with your brand, they'll end up buying it as well. But for the first year, you got to get sales in. One of the core things that I feel a lot of brands forget is that end of the day, profits run a business. So that's how I would kind of put it. But it's also interesting that, television, outdoor, some of these things also play a very strong part, especially once you look at how people perceive you as a brand. As much as you can actually put up one hoarding somewhere, and if you got a very interesting digital piece, you can do using that one hoarding, or even if you use television smartly, there are ways to really use it to leverage it, right? But that's what I would suggest. I would say still focus on performance a lot more to get sales in year one. You should show that you're building a profitable business. But if you can afford it, brand building from day one. If you don't want to be as frugal, like if I had to start a business today, I would do 40% brand building from day one.
Because if you have, let's say, 100 rupees, you would only put 60 rupees in performance marketing or sales, and 40 rupees would be in brand
building. But my 40% of brand building would not entirely be just advertising. It would be a lot more content. I believe that brands today are almost like publishers. So if you can actually put out content that people naturally want to consume, and you're building brands through that, then that innately gives you a bit of an edge, right? You have media and then you have performance as well.
So I have a counter here, okay? Let's give it more structure. And let me give you some example and then we try to build this. But before that, don't you feel that even content is very, like, it's cluttered right now? It's very difficult for somebody to start doing the content. Do you think that will also be dead? Or you think that it's just starting and there's still room for next 3-4 years?
So content's always going to be there. It just depends on how you look at your content. I mean, I can think of a few good examples. So a lot of the work you've done on Netflix, for instance, Netflix's online content resides almost like very differently from what the thing is, right? It's almost like they're fans of all forms of content.
Yeah.
That was the idea from day one. So you can do it. It just depends on you having very sharp focus. If you're trying to just do, again, the worry is if you go more trending editorial, then going very focused and not as much product over there, you can just become another publisher and then you're just also selling brands. So you have to be a little careful. You shouldn't just become another editorial publishing site. That's the only thing I would say, but people are going to consume content. One thing I have learned, which has been bizarre, is that as much as you believe it's too much content, people want more. So as long as they're getting the right kind of value out of it, I think people will get onto it. They also lose focus of content that's already there fast enough as well, right? So even though there's a lot there, they'll just forget something which is like for them yesterday and they'll latch on to something that's today. So that's how I would look at it. I don't think content's going away anytime soon.
Okay, let's switch to stoicism, okay? We hear this. I mean, recently that became very popular. Yeah. Abhi sab
the last 2 years.
Sab stoicism ho gaya. Twitter to pagal ho gaya stoicism pe. Now Instagram is also coming.
Yeah.
Right? There are books which are selling out. And Ryan Holiday is like the...
Yeah.
Like we have considered that this guy only has gotten stoicism,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's an expert.
Yeah.
And ab wahi hai philosopher.
Correct.
Baki chhod do.
Correct.
And you are a student of him.
So now, how I found Ryan Holiday is interesting. I have this... Actually, Austin Kleon talks about it in his books. I do this thing and I that was almost like him giving me a term to use for what I do. Is like, I'll find a book, I'll find a podcast, I'll find a video and I'll, if it's a interview, then I look at the guest and think, what else have they done? So I go down that, he calls it the content family tree, where you're trying to figure out where, like, who is this person? I was looking for a conversation, I think, with Malcolm Gladwell. I was so researching, and Malcolm Gladwell had a conversation with Ryan Holiday, or the other, or Malcolm was on Ryan Holiday's podcast, I think. I was like, who's this guy? And then I bought one book, which is The Daily Stoic, which is the easiest one to read because it's one thing every day.
365 every day.
And I really like that. So then I bought another book, and Stillness is the Key, which is this one book of his. I've actually dug into a lot during the pandemic. It really kind of helped kind of channelize a bunch of stuff in my head. And I've just gone down that rabbit hole. Like, I love his podcast, consume his YouTube all the time. I think the reason why he's done so well is he's made it more practical and more modern. If you actually read, like, because I bought Meditations, right? I bought Marcus Aurelius' Meditations. I've also partly read some of Epictetus' work as well. But what I've actually found easiest to consume is because Ryan Holiday's books have a very simple format, and he takes modern day examples to explain Stoicism, which I think makes it more relatable. But yeah, everybody's talking Stoicism because I think the last 2 years people needed something to latch on to.
Okay, let's pause here for a while and tell everybody that what is Stoicism? Because I'm not a student of it, right? And I've read some part of it.
Yeah.
And I feel almost sab same baatein kar rahe hain. Like every day, it's like 365 meditations. I read a couple of them, and like almost every day, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So explain, enlighten people like us.
So we normally, when we hear the word stoic, what we would always think, stoic is a person who is showing no emotion, is what you would always imagine. That's what that word has always been used. Oh, he's such a stoic person that shows no emotion.
But cold-hearted, stone-hearted.
Cold-hearted, exactly right. So Stoicism started years ago by this one philosopher called Zeno. Zeno, way back in the day, he started this. One of the foundational pieces, but that later came from Marcus Aurelius, who was almost the emperor of the world in that sense. He wrote a book called Meditations, and Meditations was basically his journal to talk to himself, right? Because this guy is like very much the largest emperor in the world. But he needed to kind of also channelize his internal thoughts. So he would write it down. For me, what is Stoicism is, I mean, the foundational one is always you focus on what is under your control and not what is not under your control. For me, that, like, last 2 years, my one standard thing that helped keep my headspace in place whenever things were, because you know, you're running a company, things are going sideways, things will go sideways because pandemic has hit. My side of the business is production. Shoots weren't happening, right? Yeah. So you have to, how do you figure that out? So every time I'd go back to one of these things, but I think Stoicism is a practical philosophy. So a lot of philosophy feels very like, okay, you're just talking about it and you're theorizing things, but Stoicism feels very practical in everything it puts out. I mean, I can pick a few of the basic things they talk about. So the first one I just spoke about, right? What is the whole point of saying focus on the things that are under your control? Like we live in a world, like you early on once said, there's so much chaos around, there is so much happening. But if you sit and worry about everything that's happening all over the world, you are just going to always be in a negative frame of mind. You won't be able to do what you have to do also. But there are some things you can actually do something about. If you're stuck at home in the pandemic, you could do what you can to help your family, help the business you control, help whoever is connected to you. You can't do something about someone who's far away, who you don't even have a connection to, but you're just sitting and worrying about them. So it's a way to say that, don't suddenly take all that stuff away, almost put like a noise cancelling headphone and move that away. And when the areas of focus become lesser, then the amount of like mental strain you get also goes lower. So I think that's a, that's one foundational thing. Then they talk about a bunch of other stuff like, and again, everything goes back to things like this only. So there's amor fati, which is basically, it's a love of fate. You know, we all want things to happen in our life, but we often curse our fate when things don't go the way we want them to go, right? It's like, I really wish for this to happen, didn't happen. But everything that fate gives you is an opportunity, right? You might not have wanted something to happen, but like, I didn't wish, I cursed the pandemic very early on because there were so many things that were going on at work, going on, you know, the company, everything else. The opportunity I got was to continue doing my podcast the way I wanted to do, right? Yeah. So in every bad thing, which in your head feels bad, that fate throws at you, there is an opportunity. There's something you can do with it. Nothing is a dead end. There is something that you can do from that point onwards. And instead of cursing fate, to actually embrace it, saying whatever you're throwing at me, I'm happy to take it, and I'll move ahead from that. So there are many like this, but all of them are very usable in day-to-day life.
Yeah.
The one which I can't absorb, and I find it very tough, because it's also because of how it actually, the quote goes, is memento mori, which is basically you need to go to bed every night thinking the fact that you might not wake up the next day. So you need to live each day that way. But how the quote actually goes is that you need to say goodnight to your kids in a way that they might not wake up the next day. And for me, that is like a heavy one, right?
And it's in the start only somewhere in the book.
It's in the start. But it's actually the fact that you can't say, I will do this tomorrow. You might not have tomorrow. So you need to kind of choose what you're doing today very carefully. Because what if you don't have a tomorrow?
One thing you remind me out of the entire conversation is, and then I'll talk about the book part. One thing which you remind me is, once I attended an event by Tony Robbins, and Tony says, life doesn't happen to me, life happens for me.
Yeah.
And it changed perspective. Because every time I think of, oh, pandemic aa gaya, mera pura business kharab ho gaya. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Kuch to naya karna padega. My business was offline. Sab khatam ho jayega. Maine itni brand banai, public speaking har jagah jata, sab khatam, right? And that was the time when I realized, ki, okay, I have this power of storytelling. Let me use this and do something else. And then that was like a reborn of Neeraj Chamani, right?
Yeah.
Every time at every situation where I've thought, ki, ab sab khatam. And if I think from perspective that this has happened for me.
Yeah.
What can I learn from this? Why is this happening? What is that one thing which I can take out of this? The moment I think this, things change.
Yeah.
And you give me the exact same vibe because about the stoicism and everything which you talk about.
Stoicism has this thing, right? Which says that the obstacle is the way. The impediment to action is facilitating the action. Or if I quote it right. But basically saying, there's this old story about this big rock. When king puts a huge rock on a pathway, everybody walks past it cursing it, saying, you know, roadblock ho gaya, curse. One guy comes randomly, takes on big stick and moves a boulder. Under it, there's a lot of gold. And the emperor's whole point was the fact that there was an obstacle, right? Everyone just cursed it, went away. He did something about it or he actually used it to actually get value out of it. I think oftentimes we just like, I'm very easily self-deprecating, self-judgmental as a person. But what I'm trying to do, especially over the last many years, and I think it happened a lot more after becoming a parent, is that I try to judge myself less and just kind of focus on, okay, this is where I'm at, this is what I can do, this is what I'm good at, which is what I'm bad at. So I'll try to focus on building more on the good. You will always be bad at a few things.
Yeah.
I'm just honest about it, saying I'm bad at some things. And I don't try to suddenly be, we tried so hard to do better at our bad things. I'm just focused on, okay, I'm good at these things, let me just like double down on them. I think it's also age. Which does
okay,
that.
Okay, so what one thing you're really good at and one thing you're really bad at?
I'm actually very bad at being organized.
What are you saying?
I'm very disorganized.
This is my question. This is our next question.
I'm very disorganized. I am actually, what I'm very good at is to come up with things on the fly, which is why I do so much. But if you look at, like, today I finally sat, and this is full honesty, made my Calendly today. But I'm sure I won't follow it after like 2 weeks. Because for me, it's always like, okay, I try to be adaptive to how my mind works. But that is almost like the opposite of what being organized is.
This was going to be my main question, dude. Yeah. Like, you just broke it down.
Yeah.
And I was like, how are you doing so many things? Like, you are saying that you are terrible at time management. You're disorganized. Let's say.
Yeah, I'm very disorganized.
And let me just clarify to people, okay? You are running a company.
Yeah.
You are running a podcast.
Three.
You're running three podcasts. Then you have newsletters. Then you have written a book.
My newsletter is now 3 times a week.
Yeah. Okay, 3 times a week newsletter. Then you have written a book.
Yeah.
Then you are a full-time dad. We can see it easily on your part. Like, you're good.
I mean,
full-time. You have fun.
Full-time, yeah. I enjoy being a dad. It's one of my favorite parts of my day.
And then you're fit as hell. Like, you're way fitter than like me or anyone at 25 year age or 20 year age. Right?
Yeah.
And you say that you're not organized.
I'm not.
How are you like,
so I
health
do this.
Taking care of, wealth taking care of, and the relationships being taken care of?
So,
kya chahiye? Aur kya organization ki
so work? I am an entu cutlet. So my problem is that I often crash and burn. Like I haven't worked out properly for the last 3 weeks because I suddenly like I just felt very drained. I couldn't do it. My mind wasn't working in it and all that stuff. Then finally my coach messaged me and she's like, you know, you've been slacking off for 3 weeks. And just because you went on holiday, I'm like, okay, I'll do this now. So some things give you energy. Workouts give me energy to do anything I want to do throughout the day. It's that 1 hour of meditation in my head. My meditation is that. Like sometimes I'm like,
how do you get to that level? Please teach me. Because for workout for me is reaching that till that gym is like so exhausting.
So don't go to the gym. Do it from home. So you need to take away what's stopping you from doing it. Like I'll tell you what, I started working out, trying to be consistent about 10 years ago. Right. I did it because I've always been scrawny. I've always been thin. And the problem with having my kind of body type is that everything gets shrunk except for your tummy. So you'll be this thin guy with a belly. So the tendency I think always was also peer pressure, also pop culture. You want to be bulkier. Yeah. You want to do all that. So when I started going to the gym, did all that stuff. But I would go like 3-4 times a week at max because you paid that membership. Let's go. So I go 10 in the night, finish working out only by 11, 11:30, come back home, just eat something, sleep. I was inconsistent for the longest time. Then sometime around, so two things changed my perception of fitness. One, and it's actually in my book, is that we had Leia and we'd had my daughter Leia after like trying to have a kid for many years. Right? We've been through many things too. Eventually we had her. And by that time I'd bulked up. So I'd got nice and like, now I'm actually much slimmer than, because that time, like, you know, biceps were bigger, fully puffed up. And I was having trouble carrying her around as a baby because after 10 minutes, arms would start hurting. Because what happens is when you build your body just for the visual, you're not necessarily strong. You just visually. So Pooja had said something to me. She said, what's the point of these muscles if you can't carry a baby for 10 minutes? Which is a very valid point, right? And I was like, okay, I need to do something. So that was like one of those moments when you have to take calls. And I remember, and then that's an again, for me, it's always default to consuming content to learn more. And I came across a bunch of stuff about saying, how can you be fitter for life? I'd found this book by this guy called Rich Roll.
Okay.
Rich Roll is this ultra marathon runner who has the most amazing story. Like anybody wants to find a way to channelize how to get fitter, except he'll push you to be a vegan, which is a whole different point. But his podcast and his books have been great for me to understand that aspect. He was going to be almost in the Olympic team eventually for the States in swimming. But when he went to college, he discovered alcohol. And that took that whole part sideways. He eventually had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, do the entire process, but supplemented alcohol with food. And he became a lawyer, very unhealthy lifestyle. When he was 40, he was climbing the stairs and he had to kind of stop in between and pause. Like he almost felt like this is not how I can be. So he decides to change his life overnight. And says, I want to run an ultra marathon. Now, ultra marathon is not like a normal marathon. You're running, cycling, and swimming.
Yeah. Triathlon.
He runs but it's a much bigger, it's hardcore. And the book actually runs through that whole thing. So he by 40 or 41 runs his first ultra marathon. By 42, he runs 5 back-to-back ultra marathons continuously. So he finishes one, goes to the other. The book actually shows how he does that over 7 days. Over 7 days, does 5 ultra marathons, right? And his whole thing was this, that how can I almost optimize your body? And then when you optimize your body, your mind just works like nothing else. Like for me, just the fact that I can go to the gym and perfect my form without going too heavy. Like I used to deadlift 100, 120 kgs at one point of time. Now I don't cross 100 more often, but I try to really focus on the form for that when I hit that 90, 100 kilo deadlift. I try to find newer techniques for mobility, right? Can you move better? Can I jump off the bed and not get a lower back pain?
Mm.
We were at Disneyland. We just took a family holiday. Went to Paris and went to Disneyland. One of those carriages came, which had Elsa and Anna from Frozen on it. And I instinctively picked up my daughter, put her on my shoulders, and we ran behind the carriage for the next 20 minutes. She was on my shoulders, and now she's 4.5. Did not feel a thing carrying her on my shoulders and taking her. Because normally what would happen is you carry someone on your shoulders, after some time your lower back gives away.
Yeah.
Didn't feel a thing. What's
the difference? Okay, tell me, what is the difference between workouts, or how can somebody strengthen their lower back, or maybe let's say fitter for life, rather than just trying to bulk up?
So there are 3 things which are fundamental to anybody to move in life, right? You need to run better, you need to jump better, you need to lift better. Because that's the 3 things we have to do. We have to lift things. Jumping is required. Yeah. And you have to run. Running is the one thing I'm terrible at, because I have basically my feet are flat and my knees have this thing where if I make my legs straight, they actually curve backwards a little bit. So I have to be careful.
Knock knees or something.
Yeah, they're almost like knock, but they're more bent, more backwards. Okay. It's called hyper extension. So basically anybody makes their legs straight, it's like this. Mine goes like that.
Okay.
So when I squat, I have to be very careful, because I can easily snap my knees backwards if I'm not careful. But which is why I can go slower on that one. But what I've actually learned by doing that and basically following different kinds of fitness methodologies. Mm. My mom's a yoga practitioner. I learned some yoga from her. Is that now you suddenly focus on, okay, I don't want my body to hurt. So I learned as many stretches as possible. I know, and you give me a thing and I will tell you, okay, this is how you should stretch that part. It's going to help you with that. And I research more. I ask coaches. I ask trainers. I try to find different exercises which actually are fun to do, which are great to compete with. So I found some of those. And I genuinely enjoy weightlifting. Not one of those Olympic type. But I basically enjoy, I love squats. I love deadlifts. I love all those fundamental movements. And so over time, it's no longer about, I want to suddenly look a certain way. Can I go lift right? And then if you lift right and you're not exhausting yourself. And that's where food comes in. Now, food is so core that everybody says, right? Okay, food is the major thing. Working out is the small percentage. But you don't necessarily have to give up on all. Everyone says, give up all your food and do that. I've done all of that stuff. I've tried eating. I think I've gone through some months where I've only had your grilled protein, not had white rice, not eat potatoes, do that stuff. But over time, you realize that cheats are important. I mean, if Dwayne Johnson can cheat, we can all cheat. But what you actually learn is you learn how to look at food and seeing how much is this, how much can you eat? So I don't eat too much now, but I like, if you give me butter chicken, I'll eat it right now.
Yeah.
Right. But which means that I know how much is there. So I might tend to eat a lot more of the chicken and a little lesser of the gravy, but it's now at the back of my head. It's no longer like a thought. It's there. I don't naturally eat fried food because I've never enjoyed it anyway. What I enjoy having are smoothies, and smoothies are great to have.
Yeah, smoothies are fun.
So as long as you figure some of those things, you realize that dahi is great for you. You realize that you wake up in the morning, if you have warm water and lime, it's like, it's gives you more of a boost than having that cup of coffee as soon as you wake up, because coffee is a downer eventually. After 8 hours, it's like it gives you that kick, and after 8 hours, it goes down. So if you have a cup of coffee at 2 in the afternoon, it only wears off by 10 in the night. So now you have the cup of coffee at 6 in the evening, which is why you can't sleep.
Mm.
So I've sat and studied all of these things, and I find them interesting. Like, okay, this is interesting. I have like, could I learn more about it? And what, how do you work out to make sure you have energy after it and not just want to go crash? So I spent time learning that. So yes, I can keep going on, but the whole point is this, like, can you, like how you study, let's say philosophy, how you study something to do with business. If you actually study how we are, like, biomechanics work, how physicality works, you realize that some of the, like, if you're traveling, all you need to maybe do is just a few stretches or just go for a run.
I love your three, the start, how you started. Run better, lift better, and jump better. Yeah. If you can
think of any action you do in your life, anything you do in your life where you feel like, oh, I'm not feeling physically fit enough to do, it'll involve one of these three things.
Yeah.
It's just that. It's running, lifting, jumping. Just focus on all, which is why even when people say go to the gym, now you see these 50,000 equipments, all you need, to be honest, is you need to squat better, you need to bench press better, you need to deadlift better. If you can do those three things with weights, everything else is just an additional piece. Obviously, it helps specific body parts. You can go deeper into that, but those are the three things there.
Okay, tell me, dude, I'm mesmerized with the amount of knowledge you have about everything. Like, you have depth about everything. Ye kahan se aata hai? Like, what did you run me through your process? If what do you read?
I don't. Watch as much streaming content. To be very honest, that's the one thing I do the least, which is the one thing I miss. There are some shows I will watch, like every Marvel Star Wars show I'll watch. I'll watch IPL highlights whenever. So I'll do all of that. But you give me like a show which is like a commitment of like 8 episodes, 1 hour each. I'm like really gauging. I would rather watch a movie instead. So that's what I give up on. But my process, honestly, there are some things I remember instinctually because they will kind of get stuck, but I actually save a lot of stuff and I go back to it very often. I've realized the one thing that takes the most amount of your time is when you stream a series. And at some point I made a choice that I want to read more than I watch.
Okay.
And I don't just read like full books also. Like I treat books like how I treat like YouTube or Instagram, right? Sometimes you'll find something interesting. You read a few chapters, you find that, you leave it and you go to something else and you come back to it. I use a few like tools to remember better. Readwise is a tool I use a lot. So Readwise, basically whatever you highlight on your Kindle, every day it throws 10 of the stuff you highlighted back at you. It's almost like revision. So every day I open my Readwise app, it gives me 10 things which I've highlighted in the past on my Kindle. So if I've forgotten it also, I'll remember it more often. And it has a great hack which I use. I think if anybody uses Readwise should do, is that you can also can do two things. One is like more books you might like is an option. So it'll throw you highlights from books you might like. You can also add books to it, which you, even if you haven't read them, and it'll throw you the most popular highlights from it. So by doing that, I've discovered more books. So it'll say, okay, you've read about, let's say, Stoicism. You might like a book called Socrates' Wisdom. Reading one Daniel Pink book, so maybe you would like to read a Brené Brown book. So suddenly you will discover more. It also very smart, it links to Amazon from the app. So I'm sure they make their affiliate money on that. That's one which really like gives me a lot more books to buy, books to learn from. There's another one called Next Big Idea Club. Next Big Idea is also a podcast and they have an app. The app basically it's curated by... So their primary curators are Malcolm Gladwell, Adam Grant, Susan Cain, Daniel Pink. Every quarter, every month, they pick a bunch of nonfiction books which they've curated. The entire app is basically authors of those books which they've found giving the top five takeaways from their books. It's just audio and written. And they talk about top five takeaways from my book. So sometimes the takeaway is enough for you to remember that information. Yeah. Sometimes you're like, okay, I really want to know more, and you buy the book. So like the drunk, I found drunk that way. I found, because that thing was, I'm like, it just seemed too interesting. And then he spoke about these few things. I bought the book. It's at home. I haven't read the whole book. I've read parts of it. It's super interesting to kind of pick up once in a while and read. So I do some of these things, and I take a lot of screenshots. My notes app has like some 10, 15 notes just called scribbles, where I'm like someone's Instagram story. I will see something. I will take a screenshot. I'll save it. Someone will just share something in a video, which I will like. So like like two examples, right? One is I found this quote, which a guy called Andre De Shields, he said that slowly is the fastest way to get to where you want to be.
Okay.
And I was like, I went back to that. I think slowly is the fastest way to get to where you want to be. And because he got his first Tony Awards for people who are in Broadway and theater, when he was some 75, and he was like this legendary actor, never got it. But he's like, I got to where I want. Eventually I got there, but I've enjoyed my journey. So I went slow. What's the rush to get the award when I'm like 30, 40? Eventually I got it, but I've enjoyed my ride so much, right? Now that I saw, because it was in some video and that thing came up, and I just paused the video, took a screenshot and put it in my notes app. So every once in a while, again, same way, Readwise I go back to my screenshots. What have I not seen in so much time? That's the only way I can remember, because I couldn't remember anything in college, in school. But this is my way of remembering.
That's a great idea. Yeah. And these two tools are great. I'm downloading them.
Readwise is amazing. Readwise, you can do this for Twitter threads also. Basically, any Twitter thread you like, you just reply. I think @ you do Readwise and you say save thread, and it adds that again to your Readwise app.
Oh. Yeah, people do that on my threads and say, oh, I get it.
That's the app. So it basically saves that.
I always used to wonder, ki ye log kya kar rahe hain?
So it's saving that. So tomorrow you want to go back to the thread, you'll find it. Like, top three ways in which, like.
My problem is I bookmark everything, I save everything, and I'd never go back.
Yeah. So you need to have I think that system you should build. System of saving information, because you will not remember everything. Right? We are not like computers. You will forget stuff. You need to keep writing it down. Or taking screenshots. I find screenshots much simpler. But sometimes if you want to remember something more, you even just write it down, you'll remember it again. I've realized this is a weird thing I was reading the other day, saying that if you write stuff down on paper, it's like you're making your mind memorize it, versus even typing it out or just saying it will not make you remember it as much as writing it down on paper.
Yeah.
So that's something which I thought was interesting. I've tried it a few times. Don't know if it works entirely or not, but it's worth
trying. It does. I write a lot. Yeah. I have like notebooks filled with random ideas, half-baked speeches, random content ideas, random business ideas.
Yeah.
I have a book called Business Ideas, where I have 23 business ideas, which I never, like, I can't even build a business around that, but I'm like,
okay. Make them into chits and wonders, like, ye karenge.
Exactly. And that's why I bought an iPad now, and I'm like, notebooks mein bahut sara, main ghum jaati hai idhar-udhar. Let me like just start writing down here and get the same vibe. No, this is a brilliant way of doing it. So you watch less, you listen more, and you read more.
And I make sure, and you don't have to read too much also. Like before I go to bed, I try to read before I go to bed for about half an hour at least.
Is that the reason that you have written a book? Because I feel like we humans are like printers.
Yeah.
Whatever we input, we need to output.
Yeah.
It's either in the form of gossip or in some productive way or some other way. Like whatever we get in, we need to get out.
The book actually happened, interestingly, a friend of mine got a book deal, and he was asked, who do you think might want to write a book? And he connected me to Penguin. And Penguin said, is there any book you wanted to write? And I said, I always wanted to write a book about, because I think in my early, if I go back to when I was like 18, 20, that period, I was super confused in life. I think between 18 and 24, 25, I went through like a very weird cycle in life. So at that point of time, it would have helped to know things about like everything from love and relationships to friendships to kind of building a career, building a way to learn, making choices and everything else. So I said, I want to write a book for a 20-year-old me now that I'm almost turning 40. And I said, 20 years of whatever I can kind of go back to. And also, when I reflected on those all my entire life, I realized a lot of my stories, which I remembered, were not really big things that happened. They were really tiny, like, and random instances. So that's how it started. This book's called Everything is Out of Syllabus, because I'm like, this is not in, syllabus, right? No, we were not taught these things. And it came down to the fact that there are five things that we never really taught. We never taught how to start things. We never taught how to make choices. We never taught how to learn. We never taught how to connect with other people. And we were not taught how to reflect within ourselves. So just, it's an easy read, but the idea was just to write for a 20-year-old me in that sense. And what helped was, because I consume so much content, the bibliography of the book should help you find so many books, because there's so many things I've taken from different books I've read, reference them. So again, if you go to the back, you'll find some, like, 20, 30 books. I was talking to someone, I just made a trip to Delhi for a book reading session. And someone said that literally they're going through that bibliography and buying so many books from it. Because, I mean, that's been one of the favorite parts of the book writing process, is that I literally sat down and said, okay, what have I really enjoyed consuming in a book, which I would really want someone else to find, and what can I write around that? So I did that.
Okay. So this is the last question. Divide is into two parts. One is, what is the last thing you want to tell to people, let's say everyone who's listening to this? What's one thing they should really care about? I mean, if they get to know that, I mean, maybe it can be a fuck up in life that needs to be avoided. It can be something. I don't want it to be an advice. I want it to be something which you really feel that this is one thing which people are getting it wrong.
What I have actually learned, and this is more a realization over the last few many years, is that you shouldn't ignore the small things in your life that give you the most joy. We always try to get, like, people say, you want that, you want all the big things.
Yeah.
And I feel in the world today, we focus a lot on the big things. We want to go after the bigger things. And obviously, there is amazing stuff that comes with that. But every day, you have some amazing things that happen to you. Like, even if you have a great slice of pizza, you might just spend that 5 minutes talking to a friend. Like, for me, rubbing my dog's belly is one of my favorite parts of my day. And we don't value those enough. And not as advice, but the fuck up is, we kind of walk past them because we're just staring at our phones. I am guilty of that, as everybody else is. But there's something to that which I feel we're all missing. And if you actually learn to enjoy those, there's so much value. Like, every day you can kind of go to bed really happy because you've had those few things there, right? And I've started to spend more and more time doing those. Although I still spend way too much time on my phone, which I don't think will go away. But I feel that's one thing which we can all tweak.
Yeah.
Just enjoy the small things. I mean, it's as simple as it might sound, it seems to be tougher to do today.
And the last question is, it's a selfish question, is, I ask this to every guest, how can we make what we are doing, how can we make this bigger? How can we make this better? Like, right now what I'm doing, definitely. So, content for me was a way to start product again. And you put it out, right? Like, media first and the product second. Yeah. That's exactly the way we are headed.
Yeah.
Everybody in the company knows it. Like, it's there.
Yeah.
It's a vision plan, right?
Yeah.
So what can we do better so that we are there, maybe in a better situation, or we make it bigger? What should we do?
I think at some point you need to sit down and say that, okay, how are you bringing this whole thing together where the content automatically flows towards the product? If you don't build the product early on, and this is, like, this is off the top of my head, I don't think it's about better, but I feel that my only suggestion would be that start building the product way before the product actually even has to be launched, because your media or your content is being built for an eventual, almost be that ally for your product, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes what happens with content is, we get excited with the content, and sometimes the product part goes a lot slower. But if you make that, like, you almost, that journeys need to match, that those roads need to come together. As long as you map that right, then that'll just be the best way to do it. Otherwise, you'll have to kind of move things around a little bit. So that would be my only point. But what would I change is that I don't think you have to change anything. I think what you're doing is how your vision works. And I think in every vision, you can get a great result. It's just about sticking to it and evolving with whatever the world throws at you. And sometimes what the world throws at you, like we spoke about earlier, gives you an opportunity. You might just pivot, you will change things around. Like we were a production house who became an innovation agency, who became a digital agency, who's now a creative agency. We evolved it basis where the market was going. We saw things kind of going. And I think everything can evolve. You just need to be agile enough over time to be able to adapt and also kind of looking 6 months ahead in terms of where the world is kind of going. But yeah, I don't think you should change anything. Just do it exactly as to what your vision is. That's the fun of it. Na? That's the fun of building something, is that you have a vision and you're working towards it.
Thanks, man. Thanks for doing this.
No, I'm happy to. I enjoyed it. I spoke about a lot of stuff I haven't spoken about as much before.